Looking at the Gospel of Mark, and I call it kind of the unconventional gospel because it's very different than the other gospels. It's Mark is a person of action. He portrays Jesus as someone who does these great things and acts, and because he's speaking to a Roman audience, and Romans don't necessarily value thinkers as much as they value people who act and do things. When Sewell and I lived in Revere, and our children were young, for many years we would vacation for 2 weeks in a little place called Huron City, Michigan. It's right at the tip of the thumb of Michigan. And we had good friends there whose families in the late 1800s and early 1900s were extremely wealthy, and they actually owned most of the land of the thumb of Michigan. Today that family only owns, they say, only 1,500 acres, a mile of private shoreline on Lake Huron, 7 or 8 homes, and the Huron City Museum, which kind of documents the history of the thumb in Michigan. Well, it was always a fun place to be. And if you know anything about the Great Lakes, especially Lake Huron, you know that violent storms could arise very quickly. And many ships were shipwrecked and sunk on the lake. All along Lake Huron in the 1800s and early 1900s, there used to be these life-saving stations, which were part of the air to rescue ships that sunk because it happened so frequently. Well, during several summers there, we had the opportunity to see the power of those storms and how they would spring up. One of their friends brought a small sailboat, I think about 20 feet, to sail on the lake when we were there. And Dave took out us sailing one day, a future son-in-law, myself, and my son David, who was only 7 or 8 at the time. And when we got out of the inlet where we normally go to the beach, suddenly an unexpected storm sprung up, and high winds, gusts, rain. We were soaked. Water was splashing over the sides of the boat. The boat rocked violently over the waves that developed. I have to say, we were all very nervous. My son David sat huddled between my knees and arms, my arms wrapped around him. Dave eventually got us back to shore, thankfully. But another year, we watched Dave take out that same boat by himself. And again, a storm popped up, and that boat tipped over, and Dave was sitting on the bottom of the boat, holding onto the keel, until eventually we could get him in. Well, the Sea of Galilee is very much like that. It's known for its violent storms that pop up at the last moment. You see, the Sea of Galilee is 628 feet below sea level, and it's the lowest freshwater lake on the earth. And only one other lake is lower, and that's the Dead Sea itself. Well, just north of the Sea of Galilee is Mount Hermon, 9,300 feet high. And all around the sea are these high ridges in rough terrain. You can see it in these ravines. And when the cold air off the mountain blows down through those ravines and clashes with the warmer air on the sea, you get these great storms and squalls that spring up at a moment's notice. Well, in our text today, Jesus twice instructs his disciples to make a journey to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, a journey of about 8 miles across the lake. And on both occasions, great storms arise. Why did Jesus ask his disciples to make that journey to the other side? What can we learn from these accounts as we think about it? Well, listen to our text in Mark chapter 4, verse, and then in Mark chapter 6, you can follow on the screen of the Pew Bible. It's page 39 in the New Testament. On that day, when evening had come, Jesus said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took Jesus with them in the boat. And just as he was, other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. And they woke him and said to Jesus, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm on the waters. And he said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and sea obey him?" And then skipping down to chapter 6, it says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after saying farewell to them, he went up to the mountain to pray. When evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And when Jesus saw that the disciples were straining at the oars against an adverse wind, he came towards them early in the morning, walking on the sea. He intended to pass them by, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Then Jesus got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. Now, think about the common denominator in both stories. Both crossings take place at night when it's dark. Jesus directs the disciples to make the crossing. In Mark 4, they had spent a day, Jesus had spent a day teaching the crowds, and we talked about that last week where he taught in parables, and he was exhausted, he needed a break. So he directed his disciples to cross over to the eastern shore. Then in Mark 6, Jesus, it says, made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead to the other side, the western side, while he dismissed the crowd. The clear implication there is the disciples, they didn't want to leave. It had been a spectacular day. Jesus had just fed the 5,000. The crowds were hanging around. Everyone was excited. They didn't want the moment to end. Well, in John, the Gospel of John, John tells us about this event. He says this in 6:14 and 15. Seeing this miracle that Jesus had performed, feeding the 5,000, the people were said, "Surely this is the prophet who has come into the world." Jesus knew that they were about to come and seize him in order to make him king by force. So he went off again to the hills by himself. Jesus didn't come to be a physical king or to lead a rebellion against Rome. So he made his disciples leave in the boat, and he retreated into the hills to be alone, to refocus his priorities, keep his priorities focused on what God wanted him to do. And in both cases, what happens? A great storm arose. We know four of the disciples, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, were experienced fishermen. They made their living on the Sea of Galilee. They were used to these storms. But in the first instance, it says the boat was being swamped. So even these experienced fishermen were scared for their lives. In the second account, Mark tells us that they were 3 to 4 miles out into the lake. In other words, they were about halfway across the lake, in the middle of the lake. They were tired from rowing because, again, they encountered a storm. And when you have a big storm, you drop the sails and you resort to rowing to keep the boat riding the waves so they wouldn't be swamped. So they've been out there struggling against the wind and the waves, and they were exhausted. In both instances, Jesus appears to be unconcerned about their situation. In Mark 4, Jesus was asleep in the stern of the boat. He must have really been exhausted. I can't imagine sleeping in a small boat in the middle of a storm. And then in Mark 6, Jesus wasn't even in the boat. So the disciples felt very alone in these situations. And then what happened? Jesus speaks and he demonstrates his power over nature. He calms the seas, the wind ceases, and suddenly the waves are gone. Every time I've heard a sermon or a talk on these texts, the application has almost always been about how we as individuals respond to difficulties. And that's appropriate. And I think it's a product of a culture that values the individual over the community. Individual rights are part of our defining characteristic as a nation. But throughout most of church history, believers, they saw the church was looked at as these disciples in the boat. The church looked at itself as a community of believers huddled together in the boat, community of faith, facing the storms of life, facing the difficulties and challenges they would face. How many of you know the word nave? Okay, the nave in a traditional church is the rectangular area where the congregation sits, where we're sitting. And then like in a Catholic or Episcopal higher level, a little level up would be the chancel. And that's where the clergy would speak, and then behind that is the altar. Well, the word nave in Latin means ship. Ship, isn't that interesting? You see, the church has always seen itself like those disciples in the boat, huddled together, facing life, struggling with their fears, wondering why the religious community was so struggling with life, and Jesus comes to be in their midst. The disciples were a group struggling with their fears, They're wondering why the religious community was so mad at Jesus, trying to understand who Jesus was that they were following. And in the same way, we as a community of faith have to struggle with our fears as we face the challenges of being the church in the 20th century in a culture increasingly apathetic or hostile to the Christian faith. And as we live today, we're also trying to understand just who Jesus is, just as the disciples were, and how we live out our lives in the world and how we want to intersect with our life. So let's return to our original question. Why did Jesus lead his disciples on this journey to the other side? What was Jesus trying to teach the disciples and us today? Well, before the disciples got into the boat and crossed over to the eastern shore, they had spent much time listening to Jesus teach, as recorded in Mark 4, teaching about all the parables. And, you know, today many of us in the church would love to hear some well-known Christian teachers or preachers, maybe like Andy Stanley or Ravi Zacharias or Joni Erickson Tod or some of these other people. And we think what it would actually be like to hear Jesus teach firsthand. And then the disciples had some private tutoring sessions with Jesus as he explained the parable. Can you imagine having a private tutoring session with Jesus? What an opportunity that would be. The disciples were on a high. Yet they didn't grasp the significance of all that teaching to their lives. And they wouldn't until they faced difficult times. In chapter 6, the disciples went across the Sea of Galilee after another spiritual high. They had seen Jesus heal. They had been sent out two by two, preaching and healing and casting out demons themselves. Then they witnessed Jesus feed the 5,000. They had seen all those mighty works. But they could not understand the impact these events should have had on their own lives. And then Jesus got them in the boat and calmed the seas. And it says after he calmed the seas when they were out there, for they did not understand about the loaves, for their hearts were hardened. They saw Jesus perform many miracles. They heard him teach. They themselves performed miracles when they were sent out two by two. Yet they didn't understand who Jesus is and what it meant to their lives. Why? Because most spiritual growth happens in difficult times. Most spiritual growth happens in the difficult times. Do we really grow when life is easy? Do we really discover who God is when things are going well and life is fully manageable and easy? For most of us, the answer to that is almost always no. We may hear great teaching about Jesus or hear about some of the miracles that God performed, but it doesn't really become real until we experience God's power and presence in the actual circumstances of our lives. God is leading us to do something new here as a church, and we're not comfortable with it. We're not sure we can do it. Maybe we're facing some difficult circumstances in our own lives, like sickness, death, lost job, or some other tragedy. Maybe we've experienced some broken relationships that are devastating. Or maybe we've experienced mocking and ridicule because of our faith. It's in those moments when we have the opportunity to really discover who Jesus is. You know, if we seek to walk in obedience to Jesus as a church and as individuals, we are going to experience troubling and discomforting times. That's just part of the nature of following Jesus. Jesus didn't cause the storms we read about to happen. I've said many times this past year, God doesn't cause the pain, the suffering, the storms, and tragedies that happen in this world. This world is corrupted by sin, both the created world and human beings. That's why there's so much evil and tragedy in this world that we experience. But God uses those things for his own purposes and glory. Discomfort, uncertainty, troubling times, those are the times when we really have the opportunity to learn who Jesus is. We turn to him. Think back through your own lives. When have you really experienced God's presence? When have you grown most in your own understanding of who God is? In the easy times, when things are going well? Or in the troubling, discomforting times? The disciples heard this great teaching from Jesus. They saw him perform all kinds of miracles, yet they would ultimately learn the most in the midst of the storms. You know, during these times, we can respond one of two ways. We can respond with fear or with faith. Jesus said to his disciples in the first storm, at the end, why are you afraid? Have you still no faith? You see, faith and fear are opposites. Faith is confidence in God and Jesus, even though we can't see them. It's confidence that God is still there, that He'll strengthen us, that He'll walk with us and show us the way through whatever we're facing. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. In faith, we turn to God with confidence that He'll meet us and enable us to walk through everything. And there we find the rest and peace in the midst of the storm. That's the picture of Jesus sleeping on the boat in the middle of the storm. But more often than not, we respond with fear and uncertainty. We become anxious and confused. We're not sure what to do. We feel sometimes alone and wonder where God is. We ask our questions, why me, why us? God, why are you doing this? Don't you care about me, about us? We feel like we've lost control of life. And that's what was happening to the disciples. The storms must have been fierce because even those experienced fishermen who grew up on the lake all their lives were afraid. So they wake up the sleeping Jesus in the first crossing and ask Jesus, don't you care that we may sink and drown in the storm? But the amazing thing in both of these stories is that when Jesus shows up and intercedes and calms the storms, they are even more afraid. Now, the Revised Standard Version describes them as being filled with awe, but a better translation really would be, they became very much afraid and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and sea obey him? In Mark 6, when they realize it's Jesus walking on the water, it says, for they saw him and were terrified. But they immediately spoke to him and said, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. Why were they more afraid after Jesus intervened? They recognized that Jesus didn't fit their expectations. He was unmanageable as the storm itself. They can't control Jesus. We can't control Jesus. They don't really know who he is. He does the unexpected. They have no control over what he will do. So the second thing this text tells us is that fear comes when we lose control. Fear comes when we lose control. The circumstances of life may cause us to fear, but sometimes Jesus will cause us to fear because of who he is and what he can do. We can be afraid sometimes that if we really entrust ourselves to him, he'll ask us to do something we aren't comfortable doing. That's a loss of control. I know some of you have faced or are facing difficult circumstances, and fear can take hold because we don't know what's coming, and we feel like we've lost control. As a church, it's easy to feel the same fear and lack of control as a result of the decline over the decades and changes that have happened and probably continue to happen. It feels like sometimes we lose control over what we know. And that's why so many churches have a hard time changing, because it feels like they're losing control. When we're afraid, and oftentimes our response is to try to control things, all the harder. And when we try to control things, we become more resistant to what Jesus wants to do in our midst. One of the things I have to say to you is I really, as a church, have to commend you, and I'm truly amazed how you have handled the changes that have taken place here this past year. It's truly been a blessing to watch. It really is, because it doesn't typically happen in churches like this. You have really handled it well. Yes, it is. Absolutely. It is a huge thing. I've been in other churches, and people have always fought changes, and I know it's hard, and it feels like control is changing, but you have been so gracious in the process. Max Lucado, a well-known Christian author, tells a story about a German pastor, Martin Niemöller, who took a courageous stand against Hitler. He first met Hitler in 1933, and after meeting, he said this, I discovered that Herr Hitler is a terribly frightened man. And then he went on to say this, fear and the related need to be in control in response to that fear will often release the tyrant within us and cause us to fight back against everything. Well, the disciples, despite their fear, they called on Jesus. They woke him up. They called on him. And that's important. when we face difficult circumstances, to call on him. Hopefully we'll fall on our knees and ask him for help. And what does that say? It says difficult times is when we really learn about who Jesus is. That's when we really learn about who he is, when we face the difficult times. And what did the disciples learn here? Well, the disciples learned about Christology. That's seminary speak, okay? It simply means they learned about who Jesus really is. They learned what he's capable of. You know, the disciples spent a lot of time with Jesus. But did they really know who he was? In the church, we hear all about Jesus all of our lives. And if we grow up in the church, we hear it all the time. But do we really appreciate who he is? Jesus spoke, and suddenly the wind and the storm stopped. Not once, but twice. Not only did the wind cease, but suddenly the waves disappeared and the water was completely calm. Think about that. When there is a storm, and after the storm passes, the waves on the ocean continue rough for many days afterwards. You don't believe me? Go up to Hampton Beach after a storm, and the waves and the surf will be breaking much harder for 2 or 3 days after that storm. But Jesus spoke, and the water was just calm immediately. We look at nature and appreciate its beauty and the order that's built into it, the ecological processes. But we also recognize its power and recognize that often we can't really control the hurricanes, the tornadoes, the earthquakes, the tsunamis, the floods, the volcanoes. We see the unstoppable destruction. But here is Jesus, and the winds stop and the waters cease at his words and presence. He's speaking to the sea like a parent speaks to a child. David, don't do that. And that's how Jesus is speaking. He says, cease, be still. Jesus is the creator of the world and ultimately holds complete power over nature. He's incredibly powerful. Do we understand that? The disciples saw that power and were afraid because they recognized just how powerful he is and who he is. Last week, Sue and I visited our daughter Sean's adopted family down in New Jersey. And Sean's sister Liz lives on a barrier island on the coast, about halfway down the New Jersey shore. She lives right on the bayside of the water of that reef, barrier island. The house is no more than 10 feet from the water. When Hurricane Sandy hit, her home was completely destroyed. It was well over 14 months before they finished the rebuilding and could move back in. I asked her, what would you do if another hurricane came along? She said this. It was obviously devastating and frightening to her. Her response was, I would leave and never come back. Once was enough. Now, imagine if Jesus was there, standing on the wall, the shore by her house, when Sandy comes roaring in and says, peace, be still. And that storm just ceased, disappeared. What would our responses be? Probably there would be some fear involved as we realized that he is far beyond our control and understanding in who he is. I don't think we fully appreciate who Jesus is, just like his disciples. He's God himself, almighty, the creator, and powerful, more powerful than anything or anyone in this universe. No situation or circumstance is beyond his control. Do we really believe that? Sometimes I struggle with that. We all do. No life circumstance we will ever face is beyond his control. He will always meet our needs in whatever circumstances. That doesn't mean he'll do the way we expect it. It doesn't mean that he'll do the way we want it to be done. It simply means that no circumstances is beyond his power. Who is this, that even the wind and sea obey him? The second thing we learn in these stories is that if we follow Jesus, we can be assured that he loves and cares for us. Now, when difficult times we usually ask, where is God in all of this? Doesn't he care about me? And in the first story, that's what the disciples ask when they wake up Jesus. He was sleeping in the middle of the storm. They say, teacher, don't you not care that we are perishing? Do you not care for us? They doubted Jesus' care and love for them. And in the second story in Mark 6, Jesus wasn't even in the boat. And in fact, the second story, you know, he was on land. He was 3 or 4 or 5 miles away from them. It was night. He was up in the hills. Now, Could Jesus physically see them out there? I tend to doubt that, physically, with our sight. But yet, he still knew they were in trouble. He knew, because he's God. So Mark 6 says, when he saw that they were straining at the oars against an adverse wind, he came towards them early in the morning, walking on the sea. He intended to pass them by. Even though Jesus wasn't physically present with them, he knew their situation. He was right there when they needed him. He comes to them in a way they never expected, walking on the water in the midst of a storm. Now, these weren't calm waters. This was a storm, rough waters. It would have been both fascinating and scary to see. I think that last phrase is so intriguing. He intended to pass them by. He came walking on the water, basically saying, "All right, guys, see me here walking on the water? I knew you were in trouble. I didn't abandon you. I'm right here now. I can take care of you. Do you remember that first storm? How I calmed the waters? I don't even need you to get in the boat. You'll be all right. I think I'll just keep on walking by and meet you on the shore. You should know it's okay right now. I've got your back." But Jesus saw that they were terrified and scared, and so he changed his plans. He got in the boat. He wanted to assure them that he cared for them and was right there with them in the midst of it. And he wants to do the same for us today, to let us know that he's right here with us, that he cares for us and will never abandon us no matter what happens. Do you know that? Do you believe that? Jesus is always going to be taking us on journeys to the other side, at places we haven't been. That's just part of what it means to follow him. That's why we settled on the new name, Journey Church on the Common. As we seek to follow Jesus, we're always going to be on a journey. He sees the bigger picture and knows what's truly best for us. And that'll always be uncomfortable for us. Facing the unknown, experiencing the changes that come, and facing the storms and difficulties we experience in that journey. That's how it was for the disciples. That's how it is for us today, because people are the same, no matter when they live. We're no different. They're no different than us. We're no different than the disciples. And that's going to be scary unless we know that Jesus is all-powerful and can take care of any situation, he can do anything, and that he'll never leave us or abandon us, but he'll be right there in lockstep with us as we face the challenges of life as his follower. But if in our fear and anxiety, we try to control everything ourselves rather than calling on Jesus, then we end up hindering what God wants to do. And we only bring more confusion and anxiety to our lives. The picture of the story in Mark 4 is such an interesting picture. The storm is raging, the disciples are scared and fearful, and there's Jesus sleeping in the stern of the ship, fully resting. That's what God wants to do for us. As he takes us through the challenges of life, he wants us to be able to just be fully at peace, sleeping in the stern of his boat. Remember this simple illustration. Every time you walk into this building, where you're sitting and I'm standing now, as we said before, is called the nave. It means the ship. We are sitting in a ship together, and in the coming weeks and years, just like the disciples were in the small boats on the Sea of Galilee, and no matter what storms may come, Jesus is right there in our midst, right alongside of us. We may not always see him, but he's always there. One of the reasons I'm standing on the floor as opposed to the chancel or the altar area, because I'm in the same boat with you, facing the same uncertainties. I'm no different. But I know this one certainty. When Jesus leads us on a journey to the other side, whether it's as a church or as individuals, he's always adequate to complete that journey and to walk us through any challenge we may face. Let's pray.